It's Labor Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm your host, Rachel Haynes, and my co-host, Stephen Siegel, isn't in the studio, but he is joining us on the phone. Are you there, Stephen?
I am here, yeah.
All right, great. We are broadcasting around the world from Portland, Oregon. Both of us are public school teachers and host every second Monday of the month, where we typically interview educators and talk about what's going on in their schools and in their unions. So tonight's show will be a little different than our usual interview format. We'll be having a conversation with fellow educators and activists about the current state of education in Oregon and what educators are doing to fight to protect public education. Joining us in the studio is Matt Reed and Chris Bueller. Please tell us a little bit about yourself, what you teach, and why you got into education. Welcome.
Thanks for having us. My name is Matt Reed. I am an educator in PPS, in Portland Public Schools. I teach social studies at the high school level. I also teach American Sign Language. I decided to become a teacher because there's something incredibly hopeful and beautiful about working with young people and helping them feel empowered and to think critically about the world around them and helping them make the more just and equitable world that we all want to live in. If I'm committed to that work, then that means I'm committed to working with the young people who will make that happen. And there's nothing more hopeful than doing that work. So that's why I teach.
My name is Chris Bueller. I'm also a teacher in Portland Public Schools. I teach social studies, and I teach specifically political economy in a class called IB Global Politics. And what really got me into education was all the inspiring teachers that taught me, and really thinking about what I wanted to do for a career. I was so inspired by the work that previous teachers have had in my own life, and that's a big reason for why I became a teacher.
Awesome. Great. Well, thank you both for being here. Oregon has been in a funding crisis for years. So let's talk first about how we've ended up with decades of disinvestment in education. What is your understanding of our state's failures to raise revenue and invest in public education? Take it away.
Wonderful and big question. What's my understanding, or what's our understanding of why we are in the state we're in?
I
think we in the 1990s saw companies and capital do everything they can to try to avoid paying taxes and to get people to refuse to pay taxes for public services like our schools. And I think we're now seeing the effects of that today. In the classroom, I feel like my class sizes only get larger and larger and larger. I see students coming in with even more trauma coming from home, coming from their personal lives, trauma related to interpersonal relationships, trauma related to racism and to poverty at home. When a student comes in and their stomach is grumbling, when a student comes into my classroom and they don't know if their dad is gonna get picked up by ICE, it makes it really hard for them to concentrate on anything that's happening in the classroom. And I spend a lot of my time trying to build community and try to build support for those students so that they ultimately can feel able to learn. But our systematic disinvestment in our schools from our lack, from the fact that taxpayers or the rich aren't paying their fair share has led to this situation where our schools are becoming these like social service agencies for students, and we're ill-equipped and ill-resourced to provide them what they need.
And I mean, I'm curious because I have that same experience with students and what I see, the results of disinvestment. So let's like really try to grapple with this idea of why do you think that our state is making the choice to allow for corporations to have less and less responsibility to paying their taxes, and that our, you know, we've seen our tax rates also a greater divide between the rich and the poor and how much they pay. What's your understanding, Chris?
You know, these the state of public education today is a direct result of political decisions from our past. And going back as far back as 1999, we can see a systemic disinvestment of public education all across the state. Since 1999, we have a deficit of $18.7 billion of how we have underfunded schools from a model that we have that's backed by evidence that suggests how much we really need to raise to have a fully functioning public education system. That's called the quality education model. And we have underfunded public education in the state of Oregon by $18.7 billion from that model. And there's a whole host of reasons of why that's happening, going back to Measure 5 in the mid-90s, but also the broader conversation of income inequality in the state. The corporate contribution and income taxes stands near its lowest level over the past four decades. In the mid-70s, corporations paid about 18.5% of all income taxes paid to Oregon. In the current budget period, corporations are expected to pay only 6.8% of all income taxes. And there's real material issues of that. You know, in that mid-70s, one of every $5 of income taxes were funded by corporations. This upcoming budget period, it's only one in 15 of every dollar goes to the state. So really what we're seeing is that corporations and the wealthiest people in our state are really not paying their fair share. And what we're asking is basically students to pay for it.
And working people. Yeah. Personal income tax. So with that disinvestment, the $17.9 billion, is that correct?
18.7.
So we're looking at billions of dollars every single year that has we've underfunded education, right? So the quality education model has never been met. The funding that is required for that has never been met since its inception. Is that true?
That's correct.
That's what I thought. So we've talked a little bit about what disinvestment looks like in your job. Matt, you pointed to some of those things and at your school. What other evidence do you see of the disinvestment? And sort of the flip to that, what do you wish that our schools provided that we are unable to provide right now? So that's a lot to tackle, and we have to break in a couple of minutes for a funding pitch. But
well, you know, the most frustrating thing for me as a young teacher, I've only been a teacher for 7 years, but there's such an idealist sense of what education can look like when you're in your graduate school program. I got my master's in education from Lewis and Clark, and there's this idea of what education could truly be when you read about it in a textbook or you learn about it in a classroom. The reality is we do not have working conditions that at all get us to what a best practice for teaching is. And that's extremely frustrating when you spend a bunch of time trying to take what you've learned from school and really apply it in a real sense and realize that you cannot sustainably provide those services for citizens of the state. And, you know, with class size numbers so high they are and the workload conditions so tough they are, it's really hard to be the best teacher for your students. And that's something that really I internalize as a teacher and one that is really frustrating. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just real quick, I can echo that the really hollowed feeling when every day I want to come to school with a well-prepared lesson, I want to give it, deliver it, and make sure that my students feel empowered and engaged in a highly engaging piece of curriculum, and then have to spend time after class digesting, making sense of what they learned and what they didn't learn, and then assessing, grading, and then having to do that over and over again. That would take 12 hours a day, given our class size loads, 14 hours a day, and we don't have that kind of time.
Mm-hmm. And after the break, I can talk a little bit about what that looks like in elementary school. But we will stop now and hear a pitch that everyone should listen to about becoming a member of KABU.
It's true. My name is Lisa Loving. I started volunteering here in 1990. I spent half my life here, and that's why I know that Labor Radio is one of our legacy shows. And really, if you're listening right now and you value organized labor, you need to be supporting this programming. And the number to call is 877 5266. We have people who come every Monday night, and it's a totally different group of people every week who convene and bring a totally different discussion about organized labor. And it's incredible, the themes that we get on the air here. And honestly, there's not very many places. I'm deeply concerned that there are not very many places to learn more about organized labor in the United States, since we are a capitalist society, theoretically. And it seems like that's something that has such a huge impact. And if you are listening to me right now, this is the KBOO Community Radio Spring Membership Partay, and we are inviting you to come over here and dance, okay? We're located at 20 Southeast 8th Street in Portland, Oregon. I love it when people come in person. There's parking outside. There's bike racks shaped like headphones. Of course they are. 877-500-5266 is the number to call. You can give online, kboo.fm. But I have to say, when you do give us a call, 877-500-5266, you kick us a little money. I'm saying I'm going to start out slow and say you should call us and give us $75 for the KBOO t-shirt. It's cool. It's hot. It's a black t-shirt with this incredible red and blue and gold design of the radio tower with a big red star. Yeah, I said it, a big red star. This is Portland, Oregon is the actual place where our station resides, but our reach is long. We're heard in the wonderful Willamette Valley, in the glorious Columbia Gorge, and all over the heckin' planet using the internet, right? But that's what is so important about what we're offering here, is that we're real people. We're in a real place. We actually answer the phone. We're talking to you. We're bringing you programming that's brought by volunteers who do the work. When we have these hosts for Labor Radio, do you think that these are button-down, shirt-sleeve dudes from a university think tank? No. Are they from some, I don't know, Washington, D.C., shiny tower? No. They're working people. Tonight is the teacher, the organized teachers. You're listening to real people talking about real issues, and you should give us real money. 877-500-5266. And when I say us, I'm talking about you, because all of this is actually about you. You realize that, right? We love gift memberships. In a minute, we're going to go back to Labor Radio, but I really need someone to make the phones ring or show up with your bright and shining afternoon face. 20 Southeast 8th Street. We've got some food here that you could share. Bring some money in. Just open up your wallet on the table. But I need you to get involved, because getting involved in KBOO is the antidote to despair. Do you think there's a little bit of despair out there right now? Well, you can help clear that up. 877-500-5266. Come down in person. We're at Southeast 8th Street, 20 Southeast 8th Street. And now we're going to go back to Labor Radio.
Hey, thank you so much. And please call in and become a member. So we're back here. And where we left off was talking about what disinvestment looks like in our job and at our school and what we wish schools provided. So I work with elementary students, and the need that Matt was talking about earlier with kids coming in and really needing a host of social supports that go well beyond the purview, I think, of what people think happens in a public education. There have been reports about, you know, disrupted learning, but we're talking about kids that need support, that positions need to be filled in order to give those supports. We need more counselors. We need school nurses in every building. We have a school nurse 1 day a week. And that's the case, I think, in many buildings. And we need to be able to support kids with restorative justice programs, kids who are struggling, kids in trauma. And on top of all that, we need smaller class sizes. So I have seen that increase every single year. And every year, I think that we cannot get cut anymore because we're too close to the bone. And we're looking at cuts again for next year. So the need is growing, and the resources provided to these students and their families is shrinking. So it's completely unsustainable and needs, our priorities as a state and as a community need to really shift from this idea that we don't have the resources to support our kids and our families, and the fact that those resources are out there, we're allowing the wealthy and corporations to have extreme, grotesque amount of profits and income. And we need, this is the moment to shift that. So I guess now we'll start to talk about what that means to fight to shift the way that things are operating in our state. What are some of the ideas that we all know about, that we've heard about, that are being floated about how to make up for these decades of investment? So there are proposals from the business community. There are proposals from grassroots economic organizations, more progressive proposals. So who would like to talk about what's out there and sort of the fundamental differences between proposals?
That's a great question. There are a few different groups that went before the subcommittee of the Joint Student Success Committee on, in the last few months to talk about different ways of raising revenue. Some are more business friendly. Some are just kind of moderate, right down kind of the center of tax policy. And then some are a little bit more progressive. And so there's a few different ideas. One of the more progressive ideas is called the Oregon Revenue Roundtable, which was presented to the Revenue Subcommittee on February 26th in 2019. And they lay out some really essential progressive values, and that if we're going to raise revenue in the state, that the way that we raise it needs to be progressive. The way that we raise revenue needs to be adequate. It needs to be enough money to actually to fund the services that Oregonians need. It needs to be equitable, and it needs to be politically viable. And some of the ideas that they lay out is by increasing the corporate tax rate, to improve the corporate minimum tax, to expand the corporate tax base, and to eliminate reduced tax rates for what they call the pass-through business profits. So there's a lot of really creative, progressive ideas out there in the state. The frustrating thing as a teacher is to think about what interests that we are aligned with and how those ideas are in some ways being ignored right now. And that's what's really frustrating as a teacher, to know that there is actual progressive ways of raising revenue in the state, but for the most part are being completely ignored because of the way that power exists in the state right now.
You know, it's great to be on the phone with you guys, and it's almost like I'm just sort of a fly on the wall, just listening. Really different experience. I was going to jump in and just say that part of what I think is important too is when we start talking about taxes, that it's real easy for people to get their eyes to sort of glaze over and like, oh my God, we're talking about taxes and different rates and who's paying what. And even a term like progressive or regressive is something where a lot of people don't, I mean, I've even had the experience where even a legislator didn't know really what a progressive versus a regressive tax was when it came right down to it. Do you want to just say a little bit more about what that really means? What's a progressive tax?
I'm so glad you bring that up, Stephen. Because you're right, so much about the way that we talk about revenue and tax policy in this state really disempowers people to feel able to engage meaningfully into it. When we talk about progressive tax rates, we're talking about tax rates that ask those with the highest income or highest wealth to pay a higher percentage of their total income or wealth into a certain tax base than folks who have lower total wealth or total income. So what that might look like is asking some of the largest companies that have the highest income to pay a higher percentage of their income towards taxes than asking, for instance, me or my fellow educators to pay as a percentage of our income. When we talk about regressive tax policies, oftentimes it's misleading because they look fair in the sense that they look equal. And so a by regressive tax policy, we mean if everybody is taxed at the same percentage, let's say we just pick 5%, that means that as a percentage of your total income, people who have more income have to pay less in taxes than people who have a smaller share of income or wealth. And so by regressive taxes, we mean taxes that are not equitable, but just equal, that are not fair, but are flat.
And my understanding is the Joint Committee for Student Success is proposing a flat tax, a commercial activities tax. Is that your understanding?
I don't know if all the details have been completely revealed yet, but some of the ideas being thrown around are either a gross receipts tax or...
value-added tax. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the quote I read from, I wish I could remember, was that it would be thinly spread across corporations. So it's exactly what you're talking about, this kind of idea of a flat rate that spreads across. And so those corporations that are making very, very high profits or that are doing tons of business, maybe internationally or across the country, will not be paying more than like a Powell's or something. Right?
Yeah, yeah. I think our understanding, what's frustrating about this conversation around revenue from our state is that they're actually being quite opaque. We actually don't know the details, and they're holding them close to their chests. And it's frustrating to think about why, because as educators, as working people, we are smart. We know how to manage our lives in a way that is that can be we know we are smart people. We're intelligent folks. And why don't they just tell us what they're thinking and let us decide what makes most sense to us? Instead, I think they think that they can sort of zoom a tax plan past us that disregards our intelligence, that makes us have to vote for something with essentially a gun to our head. Like, we have to either take their plan or leave it, rather than have a more open forum about what the right plan is.
So I want to jump to this next idea, because one of the things I think that you're talking about is this idea of viable. And, you know, if we just look at, I mean, just fundamentally, a progressive tax rate, I think most people would agree, sounds more fair. And so if we're talking about viable, why do you think that this is what is being presented, these options, these sort of flat rate, everyone pays the same amount, it only gets a little bit off every, you know, equal amount from every corporation. It doesn't do anything to change the corporate tax rate. It doesn't do anything to change, like, the main structures of inequality that exist in our state. Why do you think that that is what is considered viable? And do you agree with that? Do you think it's viable?
Viable? Gosh, I don't think so. From my perspective, the proposals that that are being circulated in the media by from the Joint Legislative Committee, either a gross receipts tax or a commercial activities tax or a hybrid, I think is another kind of name that they're using for it. These are all very similar types of taxes to Measure 97, except that they're much smaller. They're raising far less revenue. And unlike Measure 97 that did ask companies with higher income and higher wealth to pay a greater percentage, the proposals they're saying, just as you've pointed out, Rachel, would tax everybody equally. And if Measure 97 lost in an overwhelming landslide, I don't see how a smaller, less progressive version of it will be more successful.
Yeah, and further, you know, the right wing of this state were able to successfully defeat that Measure 97 proposal by basically calling it a consumption tax or a hidden sales tax, which in some ways pits progressive teachers against people who fear people who are on fixed incomes, who mm-hmm. fear that the costs of goods and services will go up. So whether those claims from the right are true or not, in some ways, that idea of that tax divides people who should be together on the same idea. There are far more poor people than rich people in this state, so it seems almost ridiculous to think that we aren't pursuing more progressive types of sources of revenue.
Yeah, it's like the bending over backward to placate corporations and the wealthy as opposed to serve the most people is a stance that I can't wrap my head around, especially when we have a supermajority right now in Salem. This would be the time. And let's talk about this idea of the popularity of taxing the rich and having corporations really pay their fair share. I mean, this is not an unpopular idea in Oregon or nationally.
No, they've done polls and shown that I believe it was about 70% of the people that were, at least from one poll, were in favor of raising taxes on the rich. And I just want to also get back to talking about what's viable and what's not viable. I think some of that depends on who you talk to and what they believe. If you're talking to somebody who believes that it's all about who has the most money, then they're going to say, well, maybe this regressive tax proposal is viable because there are some corporations on the side, you know, namely Nike, that are going to maybe put some money into, media, the media wars and advertising to get people to vote for it. So that's where they put their emphasis on what's viable. And then there are other folks who I think, including those of us that are talking right now and having this conversation, that believe that what makes something viable is when you really get enough people behind it, right? The idea of union power and, maybe we're going to talk about it next, the power of withholding our labor, that is so powerful that that's actually what makes something viable when you get enough people fired up and excited about something. So two different ways of talking about what's viable. Is it about money or is it about people coming together?
Yeah, well, thank you, Stephen. We have to stop once again for our fun drive.
It's me, Lisa. I'm here with my awesome friend, Tammy.
Hey, everyone. How's it going? I'm Tammy.
We want to thank Edith. Edith came by in person and made a contribution. She is active with a whole bunch of local groups, but she had just been in Salem doing a lobby day, and she was thinking about the planet. She's thinking about humanity, and she stopped off at KBOO on her way home. And you could do that, too. I'm going to strongly suggest it. We're located at 20 Southeast 8th Street in Portland, Oregon. Often we're just asking you to give us a call, 877-500-5266. But this is our incredibly fantastic spring membership party. We have so much riding on this. It's just going to be so much fun, incredible programming, special programming. But it's really all about you. It's what we need you to do now. And that's give us a call, 877-500-5266. You know, what's really interesting is that we have a very big theme for this membership drive.
What's the theme?
The theme is fight fascism, restore
Ooh,
humanity.
I like that.
When's the last time you heard that on NPR? I'm just saying. You know, there is, Tammy, there's a whole, it's almost like a circus act of all of us community and public radio stations. We all stand on each other's shoulders. There's a whole bunch of us. There's even another happy membership party going on at another station right now. Ooh. But you know, KBOO's the grassrootiest.
Grassrootiest.
We're the closest to the ground.
The greenest, the dirtiest.
Yeah.
The most solid.
I'd have to say that. And when you give us a call, 877-500-5266, the main place where your money goes is in basically paying a very small staff who create big trainings, right? The most important thing that you need to know about KBOO is that you can learn how to be a journalist, a live music mixer, a public relations person, an audio editor for free, right?
Yes,
here.
For free. I came here knowing very little and with the help of Lisa and so many other great people who just wanted to give me information. They're just here. It's all this amazing information. Soak it up. And that's what I do here. I volunteer and I just spend as much time as possible here because it's great, it's fun, and you can do the same thing. It was so easy, so simple.
It's empowering. And as we're sitting here, we're listening to Labor Radio. We're listening to the teacher organizers are incredible people. They're bringing a big slice of information about where does the corporate money not go in our local community, right? Yeah. That's what the teachers union friends are bringing tonight. Labor Radio is so interesting because it's never the same show twice.
Yes, totally different organizers, different people coming in.
So it's very special
programming.
And you always learn something during Labor Radio.
Yeah.
And so when you're listening to our awesome hosts of Labor Radio, just like me, just like Tammy, these people, we were all trained here. I didn't do radio before KABU. And now I've done it half my life.
You taught me so much.
Right?
There you go.
And if you are listening right now and you want to invest in this programming, the number is 877-500-5266. Come in person. We're at 20 Southeast 8th Street in Portland, Oregon. But, you know, of all the community and the public radio stations and the cable access TV stations, all that stuff, this is the only place where you can walk in, learn how to use all this stuff, and totally empower yourself. It is a do-it-yourself revolution, and you cannot do that anywhere else. In fact, a lot of the people that work at some of these other stations started here, and that is a fact. 877-500-5266. Oh, I forgot. We're just asking you. I tell you what. Please give us $10 a month. We're just going to suggest when you call.
That's reasonable. When you call over here at 877-500-5266 or online, kboo.fm.
Got it. We're going to suggest that you make $10 a month your contribution. I often like to suggest that people make 1 hour's wage per month contribution.
That's decent.
That's a good
one. I like that.
And so minimum wage, yeah, then we start bickering about what's minimum wage in Oregon. So we start, but I'm just saying, happy medium, $10 an hour. But if you did call 877-500-5266 tonight, you really should consider giving 1 hour's wage.
We appreciate it so much.
Right. And it, you know what? That's local. That's money that stays local.
Stays local.
Doesn't go to the war machine. Helps educate people, just like our friends in Labor Radio are doing right now. And it makes you feel better, honestly. You participate in something bigger than you. And when you do give us a call and become a member, 877-500-5266, dude, you get to vote in our board of directors meetings.
Oh.
You actually get a voice in the station. As our listening community, you have a big voice anyway. And everyone that calls up on the air room when they like something or don't like something, they know how empowering that is.
Oh, yes, it is very empowering. It's modern day popular education.
And it's all about you. We've said that already. So we're waiting for your call, 877-500-5266. You might already be a member. Give a gift membership. Gift membership to your mom. You know, we used to always give gift memberships to famous people who have famous addresses. Like Donald Trump already has a gift membership. Everyone who's ever been president, well, I have Pledge Bitch, already has a KABU membership because it's, you know, 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. I'm just putting that out. We know where the guy is, but we're listening to Labor Radio. We're honoring labor right now. We're listening to the teachers, organizers. This is incredible. It's unique. It's rare. And you need to support it. 877-500-5266. Are we ready to go back and hear more about what, you know, who are the responsible people in our community who's helping us be educated? We want to honor Labor Radio. 877-500-5266. Back to you.
See ya.
Thank you. So let's return to this idea of viability. Y'all wanted to say a few more things about that.
I think that when we talk about viability, I'm thinking about being at the door and trying to talk to somebody about how we are going to fund our schools and who's going to pay for it. And on the one hand, I see a complicated tax bill that talks about gross receipts tax or commercial activities taxes. If they use this hybrid model, one media report suggests that'll be the first state model for this new hybrid model across the country. It feels like we're trying to create a really complicated tax plan and use our students as guinea pigs for it. When on the other hand, we know that Intel is given a tax break. That's the equivalent of 1.5% per student in funding across the state. So should we advocate for repealing a tax break that a company clearly doesn't need? Or do we fight for a really complicated tax plan that may or may not benefit students and we don't really know? It seems like it's more viable to really hold accountable the folks who are taking money, the companies that are taking money from our students.
Yeah, it seems like we bend over backwards to maintain this unequal system and power structure that puts corporate profits over the needs of people.
Yeah, I mean, our friends in the Oregon Center for Public Policy, a progressive-leaning think tank, say it the best when they say that income inequality in Oregon is arguably the greatest challenge facing Oregon today. And a recent study that they just conducted in January looked at the income of the richest 1% and 0.01% of Oregon. And they showed that in 2016, the top 1% of earners in Oregon brought home $18.6 billion in income, which is more than the bottom 50% of Oregonians combined. And so we really need to establish the broader context of what's going on in our state to really understand how we should raise revenue to fund public education. We're in a huge battle right now, and we're in this fight together as teachers, fighting for learning conditions for our students and working conditions for us as public educators.
And, you know, something that this next question will address, I'm just going to say that we are all members of Oregon Public Employees United, which is a group that is, you know, really fighting to address these issues of inequality, not just in our school, but statewide and all of our social services. So let's talk a little bit about why this formed. What are the aims of the group? And why we are not solely focused on education funding. Stephen?
Well, sure. I mean, I think to start with, I think that we were inspired by what we saw last year in some of the other states. You know, I think we've named West Virginia, Oklahoma, Arizona, and there are a couple of others where teachers were... We're just at the point where they had had enough with the way that they were being treated, and that their schools were just being, you know, starved and cut, and so they took it upon themselves to eventually to walk out and really capture the attention of, you know, not just us, you know, sort of teacher activists, but really the broader country. I think there was a lot of attention there. And they were able to win some things that they hadn't been able to win through any other means, right? I mean, I think as teachers, we're busy people, but we've done a lot. We show up to town halls, we contact our legislator, we vote, we do all those things.
Lobby days.
And we haven't seen any results. And so I think that, we were inspired by what we saw, and we thought, hey, if that's what it takes to have some success in winning some things for schools and for our students, then let's see if we can sort of recreate that here in Oregon. And that was the start of it. But I think your question is also getting at, well, what are we really about, right? Some of those other states, they were really focused on teacher pay, because their pay was so low that, you know, I mean, there were stories, right, where teachers were going and mowing lawns after school to be able to just, you know, put food on the table. And that's not necessarily, you know, the case here in Oregon. So things are a little bit different, and I think that's maybe why things are playing out a little bit different. But I think we're interested in more than just, you know, looking at a living wage, which is definitely an issue when you talk about our other education workers, our assistants and custodians and such. But we're also interested in just, I mean, like the things we've talked about, like class size and being able to support our students in all those different ways that, guess what? It costs money. and so I think that's where we're, you know, that's what we're focused on now, is some of those things. I don't know. What do you all think?
I mean, I think yes. And we are also looking at deep systemic change that is not just addressing public education. It's addressing our entire social service framework and network and funding. And it's about changing opportunities for our kids and their families. So this really is a fight to end the systemic disinvestment in our social services, and also flip it around. I mean, we need to have policies and legislation that supports working people over profits. And right now, it's the complete opposite in the state. I mean, we have a housing crisis, a mental health crisis. I mean, there are so many things that we need to address. So part of it is, you know, looking at how are we going to change our tax structure that serves the most people.
Right. And I'm just remembering back, you know, to our first, we spent a good two, our first two meetings debating about what to call ourselves. And we really wanted to try to capture more than just people that worked in education. And so we didn't want to go, we ended up deciding that we didn't want to call ourselves, you know, Oregon Educators United. We wanted to be Oregon Public Employees United for that reason.
Anyone else want to chime in here?
I so agree with everything that you all said. And I just will say one more thing. It's about engaging membership and about building power within membership. It's about rather than us sort of waiting for somebody to save our funding crisis, it's us asking one another, who should pay for this crisis? How should we address income inequality in this state? And what's our role as educators? And believing in ourselves and our capacity to fight and organize for a more just and equitable state.
Yeah, I do. I feel like we are in a unique position as one of the largest unions in the state. We are the heart of the community. We have relationships with so many people in the community, and really, as trusted people in the community, we should be putting putting forward I feel like putting ourselves on the line to fight for a more just and equitable Oregon for everybody. We have, you know, if organized, if we band together in solidarity, we have the power to really change the way things happen here in Oregon and who gets served. And how well. So, Stephen, I'll ask you this one too, about different actions that OPEU have organized to in this fight.
Yeah. Well, we have done a few actions. We targeted a Nike store, held a protest outside one of their stores. We did go inside at one point and chant. That was fun. We also did some, what do we call it, holiday caroling of a couple of folks' houses that people might know. One was Tina Kotek, and the other was Julia Brim Edwards. Julia Brim Edwards is a Nike lobbyist, also a Portland Public School Board member. So we had an action where we went and sang at their houses. And we have also, What else have we done?
Peter Courtney's office, the sit-in.
We had a fun sit-in at Peter Courtney's office where we really spent some time there. And we had his full attention, talking about the long disinvestment in schools and how we're done with their excuses.
And the rally outside the Ways and Means budget town hall.
Yeah, that's our most recent action. We had a rally. The Ways and Means was coming up here so that they could pretend that they had listened to people talk about their needs and then sit back and watch them all plead for crumbs. And I think, you know, Oregon Public Employees United, we weren't really interested in that charade and playing that game. And so we showed up and we had a rally. There was some testimony and we had some chanting outside because, of course, they chose a venue that just couldn't fit very many people in it.
Yeah, and people were locked out. but we could hear them inside. It was great. Okay, so I do, we have so much more to talk about, but we have to go pretty shortly to another pitch. So we will just start with the next question when we get back and try to get it all in. Thanks.
All right, and that gives it to us.
Yes, hello. Hi, everyone. How are you doing?
I'm Lisa. I'm here with my friend and compatriot, Tammy.
Hello.
And we are encouraging you who are listening right now to support this radio station by sharing your resources. Give us a call, 877-500-5266 is the number to call. We're listening to Labor Radio. We're listening to people rooted in education organizing. We already talked about how Labor Radio is a legacy show.
Yes,
on KVU.
Every Monday night,
it's been on for
people,
decades.
Yeah, coming
right?
up here.
And every night there's a kind of a different theme. You're learning different things. You're meeting actual labor organizers, right? These aren't media professionals that have super shiny hair and really white teeth. That's not what's happening here. Okay.
Not at all.
So
no.
877. I'm not saying that you guys don't have really white teeth. Okay. They're beautiful. All right. They're beautiful. They have really white teeth, but that's not actually what we're about. Okay. We're about fight fascism, restore humanity. That is the actual theme of our membership drive. And we're asking you to give us a call, 877-500-5266. I think we said $10 a month. That's a $120 annual pledge. There's a couple different t-shirts you could get for that level of contribution, and they're all incredibly cool. But see, the other thing is you could just come in. We're at 20 Southeast 8th Street in Portland, Oregon. Just empty out your wallet on the table.
Oh, I'd like to see that.
You
can play a game of what's in my pocketbook.
You absolutely could.
Yeah.
And
what's
the answer
wallet?
To that question is money. And that's what we're asking for you to give us right now.
Just a little bit or a lot of it.
877-500-5266. You start listening to the numbers that our labor radio friends are throwing out there about how much money is in this economy, how much money is spent by the corporate sector, how much money is not spent on kids. And so we come back over here and start talking about money. Dude, we have some money. We do. And it's all about how you invest it. So we're asking you to invest in the grassrootiest station around, KBOO Community Radio, KBOO.FM. You can do it online. Toll free, give us a call, 877-500-5266. This is an important show. We're going to get back to it before the end of the hour. But we wanted to talk a little bit more about what kind of trainings we have here. Tell me, what kind of trainings have you taken in KBOO since you've been here?
Oh, my goodness. So I'm going to start with my favorite. My favorite is audio, because you get to just be a DJ.
And audio production.
Audio production, yes. You have the training. The first training was, I mean, when I walked out of there and I felt like I was just a real live DJ. And doing the board op training, that's when you're just behind. You have all the controls and you get to meet all the different programmers that come in and hear their different shows. And you're doing all the modules and all the lifting of the knobs, and you have your big headphones on, and
you toggle sometimes.
That's the best part about KBOO is that it's real life experience. It's like you get to figure this out live, and there's always going to be someone there who's going to just be like, it's okay, don't worry.
Because that, but that's the whole thing. It's that, you know, we do these shows. We're over here. We're in this building. We do this programming. You're listening. You're a listener. But there's all these levels of how we're connected, right?
Yeah, so many levels.
And when, here's another thing, membership drive. Who thinks that's their funnest thing in the world? But when I realized that it was Monday morning and it was the membership drive, I was so happy. It was like the best thing that happened because everybody comes here. You finally get to meet everybody.
Yeah, I met a bunch of different people. And there's food, too. And if you come in here to the studios, you can grab a sticker, which is the coolest thing to have on your car, and you're driving around, you see all the KBOO sticker, and you're like, I know exactly what they're all about. They're awesome.
20 Southeast 8th Street. That's where we're physically located in Portland, Oregon. You could come there right now, or give us a call toll-free, 877-500-5266 is the number to call. And we just want to hear from you. It's incredible. And as you heard Tammy say, this, again, it is about you. And Tammy's talking about how empowered she personally felt when she could learn how to be like a music DJ, a live music mixer, or a board op. It's like you get to come in here and learn how to do something that it never occurred to you to do. One of my volunteers in the newsroom right now is from Canada. And she's had a lifelong love of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. Mm. And now she's learning how to write readers. She has a big idea of the story she wants to do. She's never done this before. She's a mom. And she sat in the newsroom today and wrote a perfect story. She learned how to do it all for free. And her stuff is, it was on the news. And, and that's you. That's what we do.
Yeah.
We glue wings on ideas over here.
We do. And it's all these people, how they say, standing on the shoulders of giants.
Yeah.
You know, that's how it feels like here. And that's why donations are really important. You can call us up, 877-500-5266 or online kboo.fm for the, you know, modern days.
It's true. It's true. You know, somebody's doing that. You know, somebody in Paris, France is doing that right now.
Aw, that'd be fantastic.
We do get contributions from all over the world, which is super exciting. But again, we're fighting fascism. We're restoring humanity. The coolest pledge drive theme I've ever heard of, honestly.
Yeah, and, you know, educators.
As we're in the newsroom and doing the news tonight, there really actually are fascists out walking in our streets right now, beating people up. And that's why this is our theme. And that's why the work that Labor Radio does is so crucial. We're talking about going to the absolute root of how we as a society learn how to be together, right? You got your family, your family's your smallest, you know, social group. But schools, education, that's the root of our society. That's the backbone of our society. That's what Labor Radio is bringing tonight. And that's what we're asking you to support. 877-500-5266. We've got 4 minutes, and I'm going to say 4 seconds. Come on, please make the phones ring. 877-500-5266. Back to you, Labor.
See ya.
All right. Thank you very much. Please call. Chip in. Be a member. So let's go now to talk about the Coalition for the Common Good, which was a coalition with Nike and some of the large unions of the state, OEA being one of them, Oregon Education Association. And then let's talk a little bit about the Joint Committee for Student Success Plan that just came out on April 4th.
Good, yeah. So it's called the Student Success Act. It's also called House Bill 2019. And really, to frame this conversation, it's important to acknowledge some certain principles that OEA President John Larson laid out earlier this year. And the four principles that he laid out in hopes of any proposal for revenue that the OEA would endorse had to have a few things. Number one was a commitment to raising significant amounts of revenue for our schools. The second principle focused on a progressive tax structure, which does not negatively impact working people. The third one was a promise to protect pay and benefits of public workers. And the fourth was that the new revenue must be directed specifically towards public education. And lastly, he also noted that the OEA reserves the right to walk away from any conversation that does not meet these principles.
And what's like so maddening about this is that they have committed to these principles the whole time. And then as soon as the Student Success Act was released, we were receiving messages. I just actually received a text message right now asking me to fully support the bill, which, by the way, hasn't had its revenue portion released yet. So I'm being asked to support a bill without knowing the plan for actually funding it. But if the plan is anything like what the media reports suggest, there's no way to label there. You cannot say that this bill is going to be taxing companies progressively. It's not going to introduce a progressive tax structure into our state.
I know we don't have a lot of time, but we've all taken a look at the student success plan, and it's very problematic because 50% is earmarked for early childhood and for state initiatives that were passed that were underfunded. So now there's money that's going to be directed towards that. And then the other 50% requires districts to fill out a grant. We have to make requests to get funding for our school. So 50%, and they're estimating about $2 billion. So $1 billion to be shared throughout the state. And it's with strings attached, caveats about what the money can be spent on. and an added layer of bureaucracy. Do you guys have any specifics that you'd like to pull out? I mean, there were many problematic things, like the money could be spent for a longer school day, which does nothing to deal with class size issues. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think the biggest problem that I have is it's being argued that this $2 billion is going to kind of reach that quality education model, but it totally ignores the fact that we've had, you know, systemic disinvestment since 1999. And so this is really just a Band-Aid, and, you know, on top of, you know, decades of disinvestment in our schools, which is not going to fix the problem that we have. It's just going to be a temporary solution at best.
Right. And Chris, you said it actually quite eloquently earlier. It pits educators against working families and the communities that are most affected by our historic disinvestment in our schools. It doesn't hold those who have engineered our really horrendous tax structure. It doesn't hold them accountable. It doesn't. And at the end of the day, it doesn't help me. This is the kind of bill that makes me feel even more powerless to engage in the legislative process around how we fight for funding.
And I just want to say really quick, when you said about accountability, who does it hold accountable? I mean, this is also tied to test scores, graduation rates. So we are looking at making, once again, educators in a starved system accountable for this disinvestment. And unfortunately, we have to end there. We could do this all night, I'm sure. Thank you both so much for being here.
Thanks for having us. Yeah. Thank you so much.
And thank you, Stephen, for calling in and staying on the phone for an hour. That was awesome.
Yeah.
And thanks to our engineer. Thank you, audience, for tuning in tonight. This is Rachel Haynes. You've been listening to Labor Radio. Tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 to catch another Labor Radio show. Good night.